We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode. Before we get into the show today, we'd love for you to send us an email at questions@zenfounder.com with topic ideas or questions or something you'd like to hear us discuss on the show. We're starting to look at preparing the show calendar for the first few months and would love to hear what you're interested in hearing about. In addition, if you haven't rated us in iTunes or Stitcher or Downcast or whatever podcatcher you use, we would really, really appreciate a 5-star review. To date, we've had 49 worldwide reviews in iTunes. Some recent reviews include this review from Bree GF, and she says, "Great show for startups. Thanks for providing a great show for founders." And this one from Spork It Over. He says, "The founder origin stories are awesome. It's amazing to hear stories and backgrounds of these heroes of industry and how a lot of them have channeled very difficult backgrounds into fuel for success." Oh, just in. I just refreshed the iTunes review count. There are 55 reviews. So we really appreciate your reviews. You don't even have to write the, you know, multiple sentence review. If you just go in and click 5 stars, it does wonders for us in terms of helping us build our audience as well as encouraging us to keep producing the show.
But the written word is also nice too. So some of the reviews that have been really positive, we've taken and made into cool graphics, and you might see float around on Twitter and other things like that to let people know about the show. So just let us know how we're doing, what would be interesting to you, and what do you want more of, and how we can make this a better use of your 20 minutes a week.
Speaking of 20 minutes a week, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to spend 20 minutes talking through our favorite parts of 2017 and the things that we want to sort of go on a rant against. I call it raves and faves, but I understand that raves can be positive or negative depending on the context. So,
in addition, I think this is going to be longer than 20 minutes based on the, I had to censor myself a lot and my list is still quite long. So we'll see how much of it we can get through.
You have a lot of opinions, it seems.
I guess. It's a good thing I have a podcast every week to rant and or rave about things. So let's dive in with you. We have several categories. We have 6 categories or something. We're going to talk about things that we learned, goals we accomplished. We're going to look at some apps, technology, books, conferences, trips, and just talk about the pluses and minuses and kind of run through it. So our first topic is things you learned in 2017.
Well, those of you who've listened to the podcast somewhat regularly know that 2017 was like a super crazy hard year for me and my family personally. So the year kicked off the end of January with my dad being diagnosed with pretty advanced esophageal cancer. And then February, my brother ended up spending a week in the ICU in Montana. And then in June, my mom was in the ICU for a different thing. And in September, Rob and I took emergency custody of two distant family members, two kiddos, ages 7 and 10. So those highlights alone have made it a very difficult year. And add to that the fact that this is really the year in which Zen Founder became kind of my primary job. So both the consulting pieces, the Zen Tribes, and certainly the podcast, that's been the focus of my work life. So you all know when you're in the early stages of a business, there's a lot to be done and a lot of decisions to make and certainly some stress. So this was my year of hard things. And in the context of that, I felt like I relearned basic lessons, but I came back to the value of friendship. My friends were amazing through all of this. People were sending me like Spotify playlists to listen to while I'm sitting in the ICU next to my brother, just sort of hanging out. People sent us packages and welcome packages for the new kids that we took into our family. People showed up and helped us move furniture and I felt super cared about. I felt like as I let my friends into the hard things, they showed up and were lovely and I felt really cared about. So The other things that I really, again, learned the value of this year is I did a lot of yoga this year, both traditional yoga, and it's about a year ago that I started doing aerial yoga. And since then, I've started teaching aerial yoga, and that's become a really great part of my life to help keep me sane, help get a workout, help challenge me and make me feel like I have something that I'm scaling up to. The other thing that I really did a lot of this year was high intensity interval training. And that became like my 6 a.m. just morning routine a couple days a week, going in and doing a pretty intensive workout. And I feel like the friendship, the yoga, the intense workout, and then some occasional trips and vacations really kept me sane this year in the midst of, again, all of these hard things that accumulated over the course of the year.
And for me, obviously, you and I went through a lot of those things, most of those things together. It's funny, we made these lists completely independently. But my second takeaway is I switched from doing like trying to do 20 minutes on a treadmill to doing shorter, more intense workouts. And it was at your suggestion. And then I went off and researched it. And my thing I've always struggled with is the time. I don't have a ton of time to work out. And so I'm always trying to get maximum bang for the buck. And so going online to YouTube and typing in, you know, HIIT workout or 7 minute CrossFit or whatever. And some days I'm able to do two of them, but some days I literally have time for 1 7-minute workout between taking kids to this and dropping off. And it's like, yes, I'm not as in as good a shape as I was when I used to run track, but it's better than if I had not done it. And in 7 minutes, I can do it really easily. And I don't have to gear up and go outside when it's 12 degrees. I mean, there were so many things that I've enjoyed about being able to do that. And it's been a kind of a routine that I have stuck with since I picked it up. So it's funny that we overlap there. And then my other thing I learned this year is that we should all really care less about things that don't really matter. And it's determining which of those things really matter and don't. And then even over time, certain things matter less. And one example of that is we had several plane tickets and car rentals and reservations and all this travel that we had to keep changing. And it was expensive to do that. And in addition, when we lost our nanny, we had tickets that just went away, right? She left and never used the tickets. And we ate a lot of money this year. I mean, we spent thousands and thousands of dollars on things that just didn't pan out and never. It was essentially wasted money. And I remember in the midst of this, that of course stresses me out because that should be our natural reaction, right? It's like you grow up without much money. And so if there's wasted money, it's a really big deal. And what I realized is so much of that was beyond our control. And that while money is always important, it wasn't worth being stressed about because we couldn't fix it, right? And it's not going to devastate us. You know, that a few thousand dollars doesn't change our lifestyle. It doesn't mean we can't pay the mortgage. It doesn't mean we can't get the car fixed when we need to. And so trying to reset my expectations of what really matters and what doesn't as life changes over time, I think was a big lesson I learned. Another one was to care less about people's opinions on social media. You know, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, whatever, but people put so much less thought into the things they say there than you often do as a creator. So you'll spend 8 hours writing a blog post. Someone comes, spends 5 minutes reading it, and then spouts off with a comment. I can't put as much value on that as someone who is, you know, sits here and records 2 podcasts every week and has for, you know, 7 years and who spends time creating, whether it's your book or your art or your, you know, your blog post or whatever it is. Like, most of the time, the uninformed opinion and the drive-by comment, it's really not worth listening to.
You've really been off social media a chunk of this year. Like,
yep.
Very rarely do I see you on either Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn.
Yeah. That's been good. Yeah. I mean, I'm on, I still post like photos to Facebook because family and friends kind of like, you know, it's a way for me not to have to catch everybody up every time I see them. But yeah, I do like seeing updates from friends on Facebook. I have to be honest, friends and family, but Twitter. Yeah. I burned out on that 18 months, 2 years ago. Just the lack of depth of the conversation, you know, and the lack of, it just feels so ephemeral. Is that the right word? It's just something, I don't want to work on things that are going to disappear next week. I don't want to sit there and reply to even a Facebook comment with really thoughtful thing that it's like, you know, that should actually be a blog post because that should live somewhere. So the ephemeral stuff that goes away quickly, I'm spending less, maybe this is a third learning, but like I have veered away from that. And I want to create books and businesses and podcast episodes, because I mean, talk about something that sticks around for a long time. We still get thousands and thousands of downloads of like our very first episodes, you know, of both this podcast and Startups for the Rest of Us. Like that's a medium that people are still getting into and they still get value out of. Whereas a Facebook comment, even if I made a 1,000-word Facebook comment 2 weeks ago, it's probably gone forever. Like who's ever going to read that again? And I might have spent 20, 30 minutes making that. Not that I did that much, right? But it's just the whole sentiment of it, of like where to focus your time and your energy on, you know, and how to do that on things that will last.
Well, that was another big theme for me this year. So maybe moving on from things we learned to things that we accomplished. After several years of having this be an aspiration, finally finished a book, which will come out in January. I also launched Zen Tribes together with some friends, with Corey Miller and Sean Hesketh. We worked together to create a curriculum. Well, I created the curriculum, but like we worked together to pull together a plan that provides this sort of like mental health community boot camp for founders, for people who are entrepreneurs. So we ran 5 tribes, and I'm just really happy with being able to see that through. So starting from an idea and then working all the way through implementing it, growing it, changing it, adjusting it, and then hopefully getting ready to launch a couple of tribes in January and help founders stay connected to each other and to themselves, thinking about their own internal mental health care. The other thing that was an accomplishment is, as I mentioned, I started teaching aerial yoga, which, you know, it's not something I do for the money, but just something that I do because it brings me joy. But it is a skill, and I feel it's satisfying to have worked at that enough to be skilled at it. Really, just in the course of a year, I started doing aerial last January. How about you? What did you accomplish this year?
I think a couple things. One is I kept it together most of the time.
Still here.
That's a goal to aspire to. There, just making it through this year is winning. I mean, yeah, that may not have been a goal on January 1 of last year, but as we started going through the year, I was like, I think this year, if everything stays intact and we don't go sideways and nothing flies off the boat while we're rolling down the hill, like I'm going to consider this a win. So I think that's, you know, I'm kind of proud of that. I'm happy that I helped you with some very minor contributions to your book. Obviously, I didn't contribute a ton, but I contributed some stories and I, you know, wrote the landing page and helped review things and did that. So I thought that was kind of fun. And that was actually on my goal list over on Startups for the Rest of Us. We do like annual goals that we talk about. And that was one thing that if you decided to write a book, I wanted to, you know, at least be somewhat involved with it.
Think of how satisfying it's going to be to continue to help me write the email sequence for launching the book.
It's going to be great.
It feels so good.
I'm looking forward to that on my nights and weekends. Yay. Anything I can do to think about more about email, because I don't think about it enough in my day-to-day work. And then that was sarcasm.
Yeah,
then,
I know.
And then my last one is, it's funny, it wasn't a goal at the beginning, but as I look back, I was a good steward of our investments this year. I was a pretty disciplined investor, and I have been really on top of things. You know, with the sale of Drip in 2016, it shifts, like my mindset shifted a little bit from, I'm not running my own company right now, so I don't have all the concerns of that. I don't need to do payroll and operations and all the stuff, but I do have to run something, and it's to manage our assets. You know, that's a different situation than we've been in. And I feel really good about the portfolio that I've built and about the returns for the year. And even about, you know, if there was a big downturn next year, I feel like we're in a good position. And that takes time. And it's something I really enjoy, which makes it easy, but it's something I don't know that everyone would do or really have the attention or to detail to do. And so,
yeah, that was a big focus of this year.
Yeah, it's been fun.
This wasn't on our little pre-podcast recording prep sheet, but were there things that were on your goal list that you didn't get to this year?
You know, my goals for the year were pretty, they were pretty calm. They were pretty mellow because when I made the list, I'd sold Drip like 4 months before that. And all I was thinking is I don't want to do anything else. I mean, I think my goals were literally to like run both the microcomps, to keep putting out 2 podcast episodes a week, to not take on any new projects. And if you needed help you with the book, I think those are my 4 goals that I stated on the other podcast. So no,
it's pretty much accomplished.
Yeah. And I mean, I set the bar low, right? I didn't want to start a new company. I didn't want to do anything. But so for me, it was to kind of make it through the year intact. It's a recovery year, I guess is the best way to say it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, totally. I'm recovering from a couple years, a couple really hard years. And so no, I don't think there's anything I didn't accomplish. How about you?
We had kind of a hell of a recovery year. Like if this was a recovery year, like
seriously,
I was thinking that 2018 is going to be a recovery year.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do next year as the recovery year. Because this was the intended recovery year, but it didn't turn out that way.
No, not in the ways that we hoped.
How about you for goals that maybe you didn't accomplish?
I'm not totally sure. I mean, the book was obviously one and that did get done. I had aspirations of giving a talk at Business of Software and I did get to do that. So that was cool. I don't have my list in front of me. I'll tell you, I'm not fully prepared for this conversation, but those I know were two on my list that did get done. I think there's probably a couple that didn't get done, but I've suppressed them. How about favorite apps or technology from this year? Anything that you really used a lot and really liked?
For sure. I mean, of course, this is the hard one because this list was really long and I had to edit it down, but I've loved the Eero routers, or it might be pronounced Eero, but it's E-E-R-O. And it's the routers we got the mesh network inside our house because our house is three stories and we wouldn't get signal beyond one floor. When I had a Netgear router that I've used for years and it was disastrous for the first week or two. And I was like, what are we going to have to get extenders? It's going to suck. And these Eero routers are a consumer grade mesh network and it's not cheap. I think it was like $400 or $500 for the 3 points, but it makes, you know, because we have fiber and it's fast in one room and then you go two rooms over and it's like DSL speed. It's terrible with a normal router. So I've really liked having those routers. Another thing that I got this iPhone 8 Plus just a few weeks ago because my contract was up and I have not, you know, not loved the fact that there's no earphone jack, but I finally found a really nice single Bluetooth earbud that I'm really enjoying. And so I think it's called a Hot Shot. It's on Amazon, $16. And I'm buying several of them right now. It doesn't work well for phone calls. The microphone's terrible. But if you just listen, I've been really impressed with that. And I tested out like 6 different Bluetooth earbuds, of course, in true Rob Walling style, where I order everything and then figure out what I like the most and then buy like 10 of them. The other thing I liked and also didn't like, my fave and rave, is the Amazon Echo, or Alexa, as she's colloquially known in our home. And I have liked having Alexa around. I think that having her in the kitchen and being able to do all the timers and everything has been super cool. I'm disappointed in how often I need just a basic piece of information, like what's the average rainfall in the Amazon basin, or, you know, how many, I don't know, maybe that's a good one. We asked like when was George Washington president or something, and like she doesn't know. And this seemed like, aren't those really easy questions to answer?
You know, well, just Google that, Alexa.
Well, that's how it feels. And of course, Amazon and Google are in battle. But so that's where the rave part is. But overall, I've really enjoyed it. I think the other rave part is that the kids get in fights over what song she's playing, and that's super irritating.
The other thing that's super irritating about her is a shopping list.
Oh yeah,
like she can't. So is it when I'm in the kitchen and I'm just preparing something, I'll say, you know, Alexa, add eggs to the shopping list. But she'll add eggs. Like if the next time you come in and do the same thing, she'll add eggs again. So we could have like eggs 8 times on our shopping list, which irritates me.
Yeah. Shouldn't she be well enough, know well enough not to add it again. And I need to do this. It's probably on me. I bet I can use something like If This Then That or Zapier, but you and I have always used SimpleNote to hold our shopping list, and the Alexa shopping list should really sync with that. And it doesn't right now. So every time, right before I go to the store, I got to look at SimpleNote, open Alexa, and then like copy everything over it. And that's just stupid. So I bet there's a workaround, or I'm guessing there is, but if not, that would be a rave of mine as well.
Yeah. One time I went to Trader Joe's and took photos on my phone of Alexa's screen of our shopping list, which I know was not the right way to do that. But there were some extenuating circumstances that kept me from being able to get the Alexa app. Anyway.
Yep. And these are true first world problems. We want to be honest, but this is what we're talking about. Right. Last one for me with tech is purely a rave. I don't like Slack. I have never really liked Slack. It was great when there were 5 of us in a room and sometimes work remotely. As soon as you get a group of, I don't even know what the number is, not very many people in there, it's just a mess. And I snooze Slack so often now just to get work done that there is kind of a groundswell backlash. I don't know how big it'll get, but I'm seeing more and more people have issues with it. And I've always felt that way deep down. I know this hurts deep work. Like, I know this is catastrophic for deep work, but it's becoming more and more apparent the more groups I'm in and the larger the groups get. And to that effect, I actually just quit all. I'm only with a single Slack group now, and it's the drip group. And I was up to, you know, several, and I was just like, look, guys, I gotta bug out of here.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about you on the apps and tech?
I used TripIt a lot this year, which is a travel app, but it automatically imports like just everything. All my Airbnb and my car rental and my flight, and sends me updates. And it's just a really well designed, it's worked really well for me this year since I've had so much travel. And then I have a Raven fave combination. I signed up for Rent the Runway, which is sort of high end, like designer clothes that you can get an unlimited account and you can have like four things at your house at one time. So you just sort of cycle through. So I wore a dress to a holiday party on Saturday that was from Rent the Runway and was beautiful. And, you know, I didn't have to pay $400 for it. I just borrowed it. But unfortunately, so they have a great collection of clothes. They're set up really well, but their mail speed is super slow because I think but their mail and packing speed is really slow. So I keep thinking, is this really worth the money? I'm not getting that many clothes in a month, but I'm hanging in for now, hoping that it gets better with the new year. And I, like you, have had major iPhone headphone jack problems, and I haven't found a good solution yet, but that's okay. So what did you do to occupy your mind this year?
TV shows and books, am I right?
Yeah, lots on planes for me. Lots of shows on planes.
My favorite show for airplanes is Shark Tank, and it's because it's bite-sized and it's not very intellectually engaging in terms of you don't need to get into a plot. And for some reason, I just don't like being on planes. I get kind of nauseous and I have a tough time watching really heavy storylines and following it and everything. And I often fall asleep if it's a long flight. So Shark Tank has been my go-to for airplanes. Aside from that, though, obviously you and I watched Game of Thrones, and I still dig that show. Walking Dead is a favorite of mine that I watch, you know, right when it comes out. And then I really enjoyed Better Call Saul, which is the spinoff of Breaking Bad. How about you?
I really liked Billions because there's a character in it that's a psychiatrist that works with hedge fund managers, and it like sometimes reminds me of my job working with founders. I also watched The Crown and Peaky Blinders. Both are Netflix shows, like right around the same time, which was kind of cool because they're right around the same era and have some interesting like Winston Churchill characters. We watched This Is Us together, which was sappy and tearful and lovely.
And we didn't finish it either. There's a few more, several episodes out.
We're behind.
Yeah.
I finished Narcos, the second season of Narcos, or the third season, whichever is the most recent. Which I liked. And I did watch that on a plane because I like some intensity on a plane, to be honest. I thought the wait for Game of Thrones is just getting so long. I cannot remember like what's happening from one season to the next. So I'm grumpy about that.
We're going to have to watch a recap of that.
Yeah. How about books? What did you read this year? Even if it didn't come out this year, what did you enjoy?
Yeah, I read a few books, very wildly diverging topics. One is called American Kingpin. And the reason I picked it up is it's written by Nick Bilton. And I love that guy's writing style. He's a journalist. And everything he writes about, he covers in depth in ways that I think are extremely factual, but he makes it really interesting. And so this one was about the story of the Dread Pirate Robert, who started Silk Road, which was the early website that sold, you know, drugs and then hits and all types of illegal stuff. And it was selling them for Bitcoin. I didn't have a ton of interest in the story when it started, but within two chapters, I was hooked. And Nick Bilton also wrote Hatching Twitter, which is one of my favorite audiobooks of all time. And so American Kingpin was really, really well told. And the further it got in, I was like, wow, this guy's masterful. So even just watching Bilton tell the story is like super fun. Another one that I enjoyed this year is The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F***. And this was part of that learning to care less about things that don't really matter. But it's a book. I mean, at certain times he gets a little crass. He obviously uses the F word a lot, and you know, other examples that he's kind of trying to get a rise out of you or get your attention. But I did like his writing style, and I do think he makes, you know, some important points for lay people. He's kind of like a blogger who wrote a book. Like, you can tell it's not, he's not a psychologist, right? It's not researched. It's his opinion about things, but it is.
It's insightful. It's actually on my list as well. Yeah. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. What did you like about it?
I listened to it as an audiobook in the car when I was driving from Northern California to Southern California, like 3 weeks after my dad got diagnosed with cancer, I think. So I think I just needed something that was like, felt substantive, but was not too heavy and didn't require too much intellectual work, but it's just a way of sort of viewing the world that is careful about what you choose to give energy to, which I think is a message I can get behind.
Yep. And then another one I listened to is called From a Certain Point of View. And it's an anthology of a bunch of Star Wars stories. It's told during A New Hope, or the original Star Wars movie, Episode 4. And it's audio version. Well, if I listened to the audiobook, but it was stories told from the angle of kind of bit players and people who weren't in the main story, but were just observing the main story go by. So I was kind of, and our oldest son and I listened to that really together, and we would compare notes, and that was super fun. That was part of the fun of it, was we almost had like this little book club going informally though, because he got way ahead of me, and then he'd be like, "Oh, you're gonna love this one that's coming up." So that was cool. And really, the last book was called The Intelligent Asset Allocator, and it was a re-listen, probably second or third time, and it's just a really solid foundation of how to invest money in by doing asset allocation. So those are fun. This one, I mean, I probably listened to 40 books, 30, 40 books this year. So it's really hard to pick. These are the ones I remembered, but there's certainly a lot of other books that I could recommend. We could probably do an entire episode on just books.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It was a big book year for me too. Lots of audio books. I feel like one of the books that I've talked about a lot this year is Deep Work by Cal Newport. I know that it didn't come out this year, but just came up in a lot of conversations. It's been part of conference presentations for me and part of the Tribe curriculum to talk about the material in Deep Work. I read a lot of poetry this year, I think because I needed smaller sound bites. So I read Taylor Knott Gregson, Rebecca Solnit. I also sort of discovered Joan Didion, who I know has been a well-known writer since the 60s, so I'm really late there. But I have just enjoyed reading The Year of Magical Thinking and some of her older essays that, even though they're about kind of political change and issues in the 60s, seem still really relevant. I also had The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F*** on my list, so I was with you there. So this was a big conference year for me, and I got a ton out of the conferences that I went to. In addition to speaking, I really learned a lot at Rhodium Weekend, which is Chris Yates' conference and community. And it was sort of random for me. Like, I didn't know a lot about it. I hadn't heard a lot about it, but I went and I just got such benefit and made such great connections that it's definitely a community that I'm going to be part of for the next year. I joined their mastermind group. I also had a ton of fun at Business of Software and made some really meaningful connections and learned a great deal. Of course, MicroConf is always fabulous, and I missed MicroConf Europe this year, which I was bummed about. And then I went to Cabo Press once again as a host, which is a fantastic event put on by Chris Lemma, and it's in Cabo, and that's all you need to know about that. It's great.
That's cool. Yeah, I only went to a couple conferences this year. I was trying to remember if I went to any more than this, but obviously MicroConf Las Vegas, both editions, and Europe, and I was a host there and had a good time in both of those. And then I went to SASTER in San Francisco in like February, and I remember, I mean, it was like 10,000 people. It was a zoo, and I didn't enjoy it very much. I enjoyed being in San Francisco and seeing my brother and actually hanging out with the work people who, you know, my colleagues or coworkers who were there. But other than that, I wouldn't particularly choose to go back to the conference itself.
Didn't you hang out with Kevin Smith at Converted?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Good reminder. Yep. So Converted, which is a LeadPages conference. Kevin Smith was there and I got a selfie with him. That was cool. Got to talk to him a little bit about, I saw Clerks, his first movie, in the theaters in like whatever it was, 93, 94, and got to chat with him about that. That was neat.
Any other travel highlights for you?
I mean, for me, the big highlights were our trip to Cancun, which I think was in January. I have really fond memories of that, and just magical, you know, being in the warmth, and I feel like everyone was super relaxed then. And then being in San Francisco for SASTER again, because of the food, and I was able to see my brother, hang out with him for a couple of days. And then the recent trip to Europe, After coming off the chaos of getting the additional children and then being able to go to a place that was really wound up being a very relaxing trip. Those are probably my three favorites. You're in my trip to Stockholm as well, actually, which Brennan Dunn's W Freelancing, that's another conference I guess I went to. You and I both spoke there. That was in June or July. That trip was actually a lot of fun just because you and I were able to get away without the kids.
One of my favorite family moments this year was seeing you all take surf lessons. So we were in Central California and just the whole crew, the kids, the Rob and the nanny at the time just did surf lessons. And I just practiced surfing. I just watched you all and surf next to you. But that was really fun. I think other like family sort of successes this year, we in the midst of like a really hard year, just had a lot of fun. One of the things that sticks out is we threw this very, very elaborate birthday party, or I should say our then 6-year-old threw a very elaborate birthday party for his stuffed sea turtle peanut butter. And it was like full of games and custom made food and cupcakes, like decorated by the 6-year-old all on his own. It was just a very, creative year, I think, for our kids. And it was fun to be able to support that and watch them continue to grow and be people who come home and write books for a weekend and come home and plan events and just find their way in the world in really interesting ways.
So let's end this on a sad note. I don't know why we put this at the end. We should have put this at the start. Anyways, low points. What were the low points of the year for you?
You know, I think my like low high combination is learning that I'm really capable of doing hard things and, you know, very strong and very competent. But even I have a breaking point. And I think there were moments this year where I got pretty close to that in terms of like feeling like if one more thing goes wrong, or if one more person gets really sick, or if one more business relationship gets sort of funny or begins to disintegrate, like I'm just going to like kind of lose my mind. So I think the low points were definitely the challenge of bringing the two new kids into the house. We talked about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. So if people don't know what we're talking about, go back 2 weeks. We also lost our nanny in the middle of all of this chaos, which was really hard because we really loved her and loved having her be with us. And that just added to a sense of like an inability to control our work environment and work situation, and a feeling that we just weren't enough. There wasn't enough of us to go around. So those were really hard aspects of this year.
Yep. I put down three low points, and one was trying to manage the four kids. Second one was losing our nanny with really no notice, which adds, you know, a lot to the chaos, right? As we were kind of getting those additional kids. And then my third one was when we were having performance and queuing issues with drip back in the spring and some during the summer. And it was just really stressful to have all that going on at once. And I hit my breaking point a few times, and that just, kind of sucked. So it was good to have the latter half of this year. I think the big change for me was the trip to Europe. And then since then, it just feels like things are hitting on all cylinders again.
Yeah, I am hopeful that the coming year will be one where hopefully we have less family intensity and upheaval and illness. And I'm not going to go through my goals at this point because we're already long, but you know, there's a lot that I think we both want to accomplish in the coming year, both professionally and personally. And I'm excited about having 2017 behind us and having a break for a fresh start and a new date, a new year, and hopefully some fresh energy to keep being awesome.
So here's to making it through 2017 and looking ahead towards a bright and fun 2018.
Cheers. And one way you can join us for 2018 is to be part of a Zen tribe. Those are really great ways to connect. I'm going to be leading a couple in January. So if that's something that you're interested in, then feel free to check out the Zen Tribe tab on the Zen Founder website, or just get in touch with me, Sherry at Zen Founder, and would love to talk to you more about that. So cheers to 2018.